Okay, so good. All right, so then it sounds like yesterday you guys got your tutorial working and you saw some solutions. So then today I thought it would be useful just to go through some examples of those solutions. Okay, so what you guys are solving for are what's called the transfer functions. Okay, so these transfer functions just relate the initial perturbations, the initial curvature perturbations to the evolved fields. Okay, so for example, some of these transfer functions involve potential, right, and some metric potentials. Okay, so for example, the evolved phi as a function of k and a is equal to some, let's say, initial perturbation, I'll call it phi initial of k, multiplied by then this transfer function. Right, so this is the transfer function for the metric potential, and there are similar transfer functions for the other fields like the matter over density and so on. Another name that you might be more familiar with is a Green's function. Okay. Alright, so then let's just try to understand the behavior of some of these solutions that you guys hopefully saw yesterday. So maybe the first thing we'll do is to look at this potential transfer function, this phi. Okay, so if you plot it, so I'll show you what I got for this. So okay, so presumably you guys got things like this also. Okay. Good. So right, so we can see that this potential transfer function is a shape that's flat and locating me and then it rolls over towards phi k. So first question to understand is, so why is it flat at low k? Okay, so for scales, let's say k around 10 to the minus 4, why is it so independent of scale? What do you guys think?
Maybe this the mode of the corresponding to this field hasn't entered the...
Yeah, so maybe I should first mention the units. Okay, yeah, so these units are basically inverse megaparsecs. Okay, and so yeah, you were saying that perhaps these modes are bigger than what?
Than the horizon.
Than the horizon, okay, good. So in those units, so these units are in little h per megaparsec. Okay, and so yeah, so we can ask what is AH in those units? Okay, so AH, really means AH over C, of course, right? But in those units, so capital H is 100 kilometers per second per megaparsec times little h, right? Okay, so speed of light in kilometers a second, do you guys know?
Maybe 3 times 10
to the 5, exactly.
What? Oh, I thought it was 3 times 10 to the 8th. What?
Show me 3
kilometers. Oh, is that miles per hour?
meter.
Oh.
Okay, I will pretend I didn't hear that. Because it hurts my soul. Okay, good. So in these units, the Tommy Wade's AH, okay, so the hundreds cancel, so they get 1 over 3 times the 3 megaparsecs, okay, so it's around 3 times 10 to the minus 4 AH per megaparsec. Okay, good. Oh, we lost it. I might need to stand here and just toggle my mouse periodically to make sure it doesn't happen. Okay, right, so horizon is somewhere around here. Okay, right, so therefore, yeah, these scales are all larger than the horizon, and as we saw previously, potential outside the horizon mostly stays constant, except for a few times. Do you guys remember what those times were? Yeah, right, so this is phi, this is not the Bardeen curvature, this, okay, right, so this is this metric potential, and the relation between the conserved Bardeen curvature and this phi depends on the equation of state, right? And so in times when the mean equation of state, of, you know, for the whole universe changes, then this phi can change. Okay, and so if you plot, let's say, phi at this k, for example, as a function of time, you'll see a slightly change at the time of like matter radiation equality. But also will change around today. So what's happening today? So we're transitioning from matter dominating to dark energy dominating.
Wait. I thought we were currently in the dark energy dominated.
But our matter isn't completely negligible compared to dark energy, right?
Okay.
Right. And so omega matter is like half or something of omega dark energy.
Oh.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. Good. Okay, good. Yeah, so therefore, yeah, over here, it's, you know, I mean, right, so the tensor function is independent of case because the potential is constant. Okay. Okay, but we said the horizon is somewhere around here, and you can see that it's still staying flat even past the horizon, right? So this rollover doesn't happen until like way out here, near k of like 0.01 or so. And so then the question is, okay, so then why isn't that, I mean, well, so then like, you know, why doesn't this transfer function depend on k, even for the modes that are inside the horizon? You know, so say like over here, 10 to minus 3 or something. You know, so perhaps this phi is also staying constant. So maybe we should see an example of that. Okay, so here, what I'll do is to plot as a function of time, the potential, just to see if it's staying constant or not. So here, I'll do this one. First let me do 10 to minus 5, actually. Oh yeah, I actually get that. I probably was 10 to minus 5. Okay, good, yeah, okay, yeah, so. Yeah, so this mode was 10 to minus 5, okay? And so behavior, as I said, was so phi is constant except at these times when we transition from radiation domination to matter domination to dark energy domination today. Okay, good, so that makes sense. Okay, so now we'll see what changes when we do a slightly smaller mode. Okay, so we get 10 to minus 3, which is inside the horizon. Okay, so we get, like the exact same behavior as that mode that was outside the horizon. Okay, so this is puzzling, right? Because, again, once the mode enters the horizon, it can start evolving. So then why isn't this mode evolving? Okay, so to shed further light on this, let me plot it, a different transfer function than this. Okay, so this is the potential. Let me instead plot the dark matter density as a function of time. Okay, so this one. Okay, good. So we can see that the dark matter density does start evolving. Okay, and happens when this mode starts to enter the horizon. Let me make this a log plot. Yeah. Okay. Yes. So it's somewhat easier to see. Okay. So right. So this mode is clearly evolving as a function of time. Okay. Around the time when this mode enters the horizon. Okay. So delta is changing, but phi wasn't changing.
The time that it enters the horizon is 10 to minus 4, and between 10 to minus 4 to 10 to minus 3, it's still somehow constant the same way, isn't it? Like,
No, I mean, this mode enters the horizon around this time, 10 to minus 2 or so.
Oh, it's another one. Isn't that one?
As far as I was too fast. Okay, so here I'm plotting the mode k at 10 to minus 3. So this mode entered, so this mode is clearly inside the horizon, okay? And we can see that the density perturbation is evolving as a function of time, but the potential perturbation was not evolving. Okay, so that's a bit puzzling, right? So why does that happen? So maybe to understand, let's consider the relationship between the potential and the density field. Okay, so right, so we had that previous Poisson-like equation, right? Okay, now for scales that are well inside the horizon, okay, that Poisson-like equation looks basically exactly like the Poisson equation. Okay, so in the sense that that equation becomes as 1 over a squared, where s squared phi equals minus 4 pi g delta rho. Right? Which I can write as minus 3 halves h squared times delta. Okay? What this delta means, again, like the total perturbation, sum over everything, but during the matter-dominated era, it's dominated by the matter perturbation. Right? Okay, good. So during the matter-dominated era, so how does h squared evolve? Do you guys remember?
A to minus
3. A to the minus 3, exactly. Okay. So we have an a to the minus 3 here and a to the minus 2 here. Okay, so you can see that therefore phi scales like delta over a. So for phi to remain constant in time, then how does delta have to scale over time? Like a. And yeah, if you look, that is indeed what's happening. Okay, so on this log plot, it's just growing linearly with a once the mode enters the horizon. Okay, so therefore this constancy of the potential inside the horizon, in some sense, it seems sort of like a coincidence, right? So it's not because nothing is evolving, things are evolving, but they're evolving in a way that holds fixed this potential. Okay, so then why is delta evolving like A? So that's also something that we can understand analytically. So then why don't we work that out too? Okay, so let's write down the equations of motion for delta. Okay, so we've seen these before. So there were the fluid equations, like the continuity equation. So I'll write as d delta dark matter t. Okay, and then this equal to a over a squared times our capital B velocity perturbation minus 3 pi dt. Okay, right, so this was our continuity equation. At these times though, right, so phi is staying constant. Okay, so therefore I can drop this term. Okay. So this was the continuity equation for the energy. Then the Euler equation took the form dV dt was equal to phi. Okay? So this is the dark matter. The baryons obey the exact same equation. Okay? Do you guys see why that's true for the baryons?
And they're just following dark matter.
That's right. And why are they just following the same dynamical, why are their equations of motion the same as the dark matter?
They are decoupled from photons.
They are now, at this time, decoupled from the photons. There's no more collision with the photons. Exactly. Okay? Good. Similarly, the baryons have the exact same equation of motion. I just replace all of the d's with b's. Okay? So I can imagine constructing the matter perturbation, delta matter, as a weighted combination of dark matter and baryons, just weighted by their mass fractions, right? And then if I just add up the dark matter equations with the baryon equations weighted by their mass fractions, then I'll get similar equations for just the matter perturbation, right? So okay, let me just write then the corresponding matter perturbation equations. Okay. Good. So now what we'll do is to combine these two equations. Okay. along with the Poisson equation, you know, which relates phi to the you know, to the systematic perturbation. Okay, so first what I'll do is to take a time derivative of this equation. Okay, so that gives me the following expression. So the second derivative of the matter perturbation with time. So I'll have two terms. First, you know, so first the derivative of this v, and then secondly the derivative of this a. Okay. What we get, write as the following. dvdt minus 2h. Okay, and okay, so sorry, these are m's again. Okay. Then the next thing that I'll do is use the Poisson equation to replace this. Okay. So then let me do that. And then now I can use the continuity equation to replace this v. So then let me do that. So that also fills the gap, giving me minus 2h d delta dt. Okay, to make this a little bit easier to, oh yeah, also one more thing. Now I can use the Poisson equation to turn this into delta. Okay, so then I get 3/2 squared delta. Okay, so far you're all following me. Okay, next thing I'll do is that during matter domination, I have that h is just 2 over 3t. Okay, so let me then turn these into t's. H squared. Okay, so then this is equal to four thirds, right? Okay, so right, so okay, yeah. So then what we get in the end is squared delta matter dt plus 4/3 d delta dt minus 2/3 t² delta m equals 0. Okay, now the next step now is to notice that right, so every term here has the same number of powers of delta, and also the same number of powers of t. Okay, here it is. Okay, so therefore, then the obvious thing to try then is a solution. Delta goes like t to the n. Okay, yeah, so then we try that, and we get n minus 1 plus 4n over 3 plus 2/3. Equals 0, which is solved by, okay, well, which is equal to n minus 2/3 times n plus 1. Okay, and so our two solutions are therefore delta goes like t to the 2/3 and also t to the minus 1. This is the growing solution, this is the decaying solution. Okay, and during matter domination, a goes like t to the 2/3. Okay, and so analytically, therefore, we can understand this behavior that we find numerically. Okay, good. So therefore, then it makes sense that delta grows like a, and that therefore the potential remains constant as a function of time. Okay, one thing to note here is that in this equation, the wave number k dropped out. So therefore, the same result is true for all k's. Okay, good. At least, so all the modes that are inside the horizon during matter domination. Good. Yeah, which then brings me now to a bit of notation. Okay, so that, so therefore, you know, so all modes, they all satisfy this exact same equation. Okay, which means all modes grow the exact same.
Each of the modes, when they enter the horizon, for some time they grow like linearly like that with
mm-hmm.
A.
Mm-hmm.
But there are already some like smaller modes that enter the horizon earlier.
Yeah.
How they're back reacting on this, like
oh,
I mean like but,
on each other?
Yeah, yeah, I mean like
okay, good. So right. So we are working to first order perturbation theory.
So they're
which
not
means that the modes all you know, I mean I'm right. And so it means that the modes all evolve independently of each other to first order.
Okay, mm-hmm. So like when they're entering horizon, this non-linear, non-first-order perturbation theory, it's not getting important. Like when we're really looking at bounded structures, and now we have to take into account the non-linear effects. Like that's the
yeah, that's right. So if you work out numerically, the amplitude of these modes are all incredibly tiny compared to one, until like redshifts around 30 or 40 or so. Yeah. And so therefore, if you're in radiation domination, every single mode has a tiny amplitude. So then let me just define a piece of notation, which is commonly used in the literature. Okay, good. So we found that all the modes evolve the same way independently. Okay. And therefore, then you know, it's convenient then to write this transfer function, matter transfer function, so it's convenient to write it in a factorized way, where we factorize out the scale dependence, separate from the time dependence. Okay, so conventionally this is written as T of k evaluated at a equals 1, multiplied by something called the linear growth factor, G of a. Okay, so again, we can do this factorization, again, because every mode evolves the same way as much at a time. Okay. Yeah, right. So this thing is called the linear growth factor. D is the solution to the second order ODE that I just erased. Okay. Good. One other kind of cute thing you can do. Okay, right. So you've written down the dark matter and the baryon equations of motion, and they were, and those two were the same equations of motion, right? So we've taken the sum of them to get the matter evolution. We could also take the difference of those two, okay? So taking the difference, the source term cancels because it's the same source term, right? Just a statement that, gravitational accelerations are the same for dark matter. And for baryons. Okay. So therefore, for the difference of the two, the ODE becomes, d delta squared c plus 2h delta dt equals, and now it's zero, because again, for the difference, the source terms are the same. Okay? Good. Or again, this delta is now the difference between dark matter and baryons. Okay, so one solution to this you can see immediately just is delta equals constant. Okay, right. So therefore, one kind of curious behavior of the solutions is that the difference between dark matter and baryons, so delta dark matter minus delta baryons, this remains constant in time, even though both of these are growing quickly in time.
Yeah, but that's just one possible solution. That's not necessarily all the solutions, right?
Okay, so there's two solutions to this equation. Okay. So we can solve for both of them if you want to. So this is what? 4 over 3t. Okay. Yeah, anyway, right, yeah, I know. So I can do the same thing where we now solve for the t to the n, solve for n, and you got n equals 0, and then n equals minus n 4/3. Right, so here the two solutions are constant and then decaying.
Okay.
Okay, right. So therefore, right, the decaying one decays quickly. And so yeah, so therefore this difference remains constant as a function of time. Yes, good question. Okay, good. So good. So that would explain why this potential transfer function we saw before. Yeah, so we saw why it's, I mean, it's constant even for the sub-horizon. So let's go back to it. Right. Okay, good. So now we understand why it's constant here and constant here, but now over here something is different. Your k does roll over. And so what's different for this k of less than, say, like, okay, I mean, k bigger than 0.01 or so?
It's not linear.
Nope. Nope, this is all linear.
Wait, it was in the horizon beforehand already, right?
Did it?
Well, it was in the horizon beforehand already, right? This is something.
Yeah,
else.
Right. So the small scale ones enter the horizon earliest,
uh-huh.
Right? These first enter the horizon, and these rounds. And actually, well, horizon is somewhere over here, therefore these both, you know, currently haven't yet entered the horizon. But yeah, you're right that these enter the horizon earlier than these. So why is that important?
So they entered before matter radiation?
Exactly. These modes, yeah, exactly, that's right, okay? These modes we said enter during matter domination. Okay, these modes enter before matter domination. That is, they enter while universe was instead radiation dominated. Okay.
Oh, and that's still part of like the matter fluctuation?
This is, okay, well, right, so here I'm plotting the potential.
Oh yeah.
Okay, right. But good. So yeah, so here, why don't we actually plot some of these? So here. So what I'll do is to plot the potential for k equals 0.5. Okay, good. So we can see that when this mode enters the horizon, it really starts to evolve. Okay? Right, so it decays really quickly and also oscillates. Okay? So that should make sense, okay, because you know this mode entered the horizon during radiation domination. Okay. So the dominant matter field sourcing the potential of the, you know, and the other thing for those times were the radiation field. If we plot what the radiation perturbations were doing. Okay, so let me show you that. So this is what the radiation perturbations were doing. Okay, right, so they're oscillating, right? Okay, right, so since these are oscillating, these are the dominant, you know, matter perturbations present sourcing the potential. Okay, right, so therefore then it's not surprising that the potential also oscillates. Why is it decaying? Let me go back to the potential. Oh, sorry, this was the green position again. Okay, right, so we saw that the radiation perturbation oscillated with some constant amplitude. Whereas here, the oscillation is not constant amplitude, instead it's decaying. Okay, so why would that happen? Do you have any guesses?
Wait, like why is it decaying?
Why is the envelope of the oscillation decaying with time, unlike what the, you know, what the temperature perturbation was doing? Yeah. It's the same, yeah, I mean, right, you know, the argument is the same as before, right? So we still have this Poisson-like equation, grad squared phi is again 4 pi g delta rho. Okay, so we have h squared delta. Okay, during radiation domination, h squared, what's that like, do you guys recall? It's a function of a. Exactly, yeah, exactly. So this is a to the minus 4. Also, there was a 1 over a squared up here. Okay, right, so therefore, phi goes like Got that right? Perhaps I missed this. Okay, anyway, okay, well, well yeah, well, right, well, well, yeah, so this is correct, but this, oh, no, no, right, yeah, that's right, A is getting bigger, so there, yeah, right, sorry, yeah, so it's getting bigger, so therefore 1 over A squared gets smaller. Okay, right, okay, yes, that makes sense. Okay. Okay, one thing to notice, this is, okay, right, so this is oscillating, but it's not oscillating around zero. Okay, you guys notice that this thing, the envelope actually reaches something to a non-zero value. Okay. Now the photons, they were oscillating around zero. Okay, so then why is this not oscillating, or you know, also around zero? Matter is also sourcing, that's right. So matter is subdominant at these times, but it's still present. Okay, so good. So then let's plot what the matter is doing. Okay, yeah. Okay, good. So this is a plot of the matter field as a function of time. Isn't okay, right. So I mean right, so matter perturbation is not oscillating, even after even after the event is the horizon. Okay, good. Right. Now, before we noted that if the matter perturbation grows like A, linearly with A, its contribution to the potential will stay constant in time. Okay, so might be hard to see, but this is not growing like A. Okay, so instead this is growing much, much more slowly than A. Okay, so therefore, what does that then do to the matter contribution to the potential? Right. You know, so we said that. You know. So right. So we said the matter contribution to the potential will scale eventually, like delta over A. Mm-hmm. Okay. So therefore, since this is going slower than A, the matter contribution to the potential therefore has to decay over time. Okay. Good.
Can I?
Yeah.
If you want to like. Just intuitively, if you want to say why like radiation potential oscillates but matter potential doesn't oscillate, what would you say? Like, I understand that from the solving the equations, that's what's going to happen, mm-hmm. but like just intuitively.
Yeah, intuitively, right. So, yes, intuitively what's happening is that the radiation perturbations, okay, so matter perturbations are gravitationally unstable, right? Okay, so some region that's overdense, okay, you know, that overdense region will then be attracting other matter towards it, making it even more overdense and so on and so on. Okay, the same statement is true for the radiation, okay, but for the radiation, there's all, for the radiation, there's forces fighting against gravity. So do you guys have any idea what those forces might be? Pressure forces, okay, exactly, that's right, okay. So. As for radiation, pressure gradients act to push on the fluid. So it's a region which is overdense in energy density is also overpressured, right? So therefore, there are pressure forces pushing you away from overdense regions. They oppose gravity, okay? Right. And that's what then drives these oscillations. So since the baryons are coupled to the photons, the baryons therefore also oscillate the same way. Okay, good. So then let's go back to our plot of the potential transfer function. Okay, good. So we said that these modes have entered the horizon during radiation domination. Okay. For all the time that they've been inside the horizon during radiation domination, the potential has been decaying. Okay. So therefore, the modes that enter earliest during radiation domination, they spend the longest amount of time in radiation domination and therefore have been decaying the most. Okay? The modes which entered the horizon just barely, these modes which entered the horizon just barely before equality, they haven't had much time to decay. Okay? Good. So then let's work out how much this potential decays for these modes that are inside the horizon. Okay, so one really rough way to estimate that is the following. Okay, so the amount by which the matter contribution to the potential, okay, the amount by which it's shrunk will be something like the ratio between the time when it entered the horizon compared to the time of equality. Okay, so what I'm saying is that, so let's just pretend that delta is constant, okay, during all the time when the mode is inside the horizon, okay, during radiation equality. Okay, so if delta were constant, then the suppression factor for phi just is this ratio of scale factors. Okay. Good. Now this scale factor A horizon, that's the scale factor when this mode K enters the horizon. Okay, and that's given by A horizon times h at that a horizon is around equal to k. Okay? During radiation domination, h scales like 1 over a, 1 over a squared. Okay? So therefore, a h scales like 1 over a. So therefore, this a horizon scales like 1 over k. Okay, so therefore, the amount of shrinking of the matter potential, therefore, scales like k equality over k. Okay, where again, this k equality, this is the mode that enters the horizon at the time of matter radiation equality. Okay, as roughly speaking, yes, this k equality is somewhere near 0.01. Okay. At the time when this mode K enters the horizon, the matter potential is just a fraction of the overall potential. And that fraction is just given by rho matter compared to rho radiation. Okay, so phi matter over phi radiation is around rho matter over rho radiation. Okay, which is also, again, given by A horizon over A equality. Okay? And then we said that ratio is also given by K equality over K. Okay, so therefore multiplying these two factors together, we get this same factor squared. Okay? So therefore what we expect is that this suppression should scale like the square of the ratio of K compared to K equality. Indeed, that is what we see. Okay? So it's not exactly 1 over k squared because delta isn't exactly constant. Okay, good. Yes, I can understand the shape of this result, okay? For all scales, we're gonna So the important thing about this is that, so measuring the shape of this transfer function therefore tells us the time of equality, which therefore then tells us things like the ratio between radiation and matter. The other interesting thing here is these wiggles. Okay, so you guys, I think, yesterday worked out the physics of these wiggles, right? Okay, these wiggles are called baryonic-acoustic oscillations, and they arise from, those oscillations that we saw in the transfer functions. Okay, these wiggles nowadays are just very important in cosmology. The reason for this is that nowadays we can use them as a standard ruler. Okay, so before we had seen, the transfer functions evolve at late times in a way that is independent of scale, right? They preserve the shape of the transfer function. And so therefore the shape of the power spectrum also stays constant in time at late times. Okay, so therefore these wiggles in the power spectrum, okay, the locations of those wiggles remain constant independent of time. Okay. So therefore, if we know where they are at some time, okay, in these physical 3D units, and if we measure the galaxy power spectrum in angular units, we can compare the angular scale dilutables to the known physical 3D scale dilutables, and thereby derive the distance to the redshift of those galaxies. Okay. So, yeah. So that's how these BFEO features in the power spectrum are then used to measure the expansion history of our universe.
Each of the bumps should correspond to some sort of structural feature, right? Because, like, you'd have, like, because this is plotted with respect to modes, so it's the Fourier transform of position, space, and whatnot. But so, like, physically, right, I think we talked about this before, you know, you'd have the dark matter core in the center, and then like, these shells of baryonic matter, but then for like, oh no, we talked about this. This was about sine waves and cosine waves for the delta function.
Good. Right. So as we said, this is the transfer function. Okay. In real space, we call it the Green's function.
Yeah.
Okay. So in real space, the Green's function is a Fourier transform of this.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So therefore, the real space analog of this is the Fourier transform of these wiggles.
Mm-hmm.
As we said before, the Fourier transform of these wiggles is a peak or a spike at some non-zero location. Okay, non-zero location is set by the frequency in this space of the wiggles.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Since we're talking about this, okay, you know, so one thing that you might notice is that these wiggles just keep on going all the way down in this calculation. Okay, in reality, they don't keep going, you know, so far in K. The reason for this is that in this calculation, we are neglecting an important effect. Okay, so namely, we are neglecting the diffusion between, you know, between the photons and baryons. Okay, you know, right, so here we've assumed perfectly tight coupling between the photons and baryons. Okay, but in reality, of course, there is some diffusion between the two. That diffusion in real space acts to smear out that perfect delta function spike in the Green's function, and which here in Fourier space corresponds then to a damping of the wiggles in K-space. Okay, yeah, I know. So if you account for, you know, for that diffusion, the amplitude of the wiggles gets smaller and smaller towards high K.
Isn't like, can it be a way to like search for these new particles to see how this damping actually works and to see if this coupling, like if we see some coupling that we don't expect, we can expect
absolutely
that there were some particles.
So absolutely, that's right. So one of the main motivations for the next generation CMB experiments is to look for new beyond standard model relativistic particles, okay, through their effects on this damping tail. Right. So here I'm plotting the potential transfer functions. Okay. You know, from these we can, you know, compute the CMB anisotropies, and a similar damping happens for the CMB the CMB oscillations. I actually was planning to talk about that, but we only have about 10 minutes left. Okay, actually, yeah, in the last, like, 5 or so minutes, let me jump to that topic, okay? Right, because really the important thing, you know, to talk about is the CMB anisotropies. This is all nice and all, but at least so far, the most constraining probe that we have for cosmology has been the CMB. Okay, so far we've been computing the evolution of these perturbations all in 3D space, okay? From those, we can now translate those into the perturbations seen in the photon field seen here at the Earth. Okay, so let me just describe very briefly and schematically how to do that. Yeah, so I'll have to skip over a lot. Yeah, I didn't realize how slow it was going. Okay, so the starting point for that translation will be, will be the Boltzmann equation for the photons. Okay, so to remind you, that Boltzmann equation had charms that looked like, you know, d by dt of the photon perturbation plus add over a dot into the gradient of the photon perturbation, and so on. Okay. There's also other terms that involved ne times sigma t times things. Okay. So let me define a quantity called the optical depth, which is just the integral, okay, of this ne sigma t, okay, or path length. Okay, so to remind you, the probability that a photon reaches us without scattering is just e to the minus tau. Right? Okay. Also, let me define what's called the visibility function, g of eta, which is the derivative of this. Okay, so d by d eta about this e to the minus tau. Okay, yeah, so it's just minus tau dot e to the minus tau, which is n e sigma t over a e to the minus tau. Okay, so this visibility function, this tells us the probability that a photon coming to us, okay, the probability that a photon that we see was last scattered towards us at this time eta. Okay? So at very high redshift, when the optical depth is huge, this e to the minus tau kills the visibility function. Okay? And at very low redshifts, when the number density of electrons is small, that also kills this visibility function. Okay, so if we plot this visibility function versus time, okay, so g versus eta, okay, what we'll see is that it's very strongly peaked at times near accommodation. Okay. I that should make sense because, of course, the most likely time for a CMB photon to have been scattered towards us was at this time of accommodation. Okay, so the reason why I mentioned this visibility function is that, if we take our Boltzmann equation for the photons, and if we integrate it along the light cone, we can show that it takes a simple form in terms of this visibility function. Okay, so if we show that the integral of the Boltzmann equation, which then gives us the photon perturbation, So you can show that it's an integral of the optical depth e to the minus tau times a bunch of stuff, but including a term that looks like n sigma t over a times some other stuff. Okay, and so this product of n sigma t times e to the minus tau, that's the visibility. Okay, so now, as I mentioned, this function, this g, is really strongly peaked at the time of recombination. Oh, it's hard to see. I'm not sure if it is the lights, but okay. Okay, anyway, though, right, so just the key thing is that, okay, so the key approximation made is to replace this visibility function in this integral with a delta function centered on time of recombination. Okay. And doing so lets you dramatically simplify this integral. So I was planning to write out the full expression for this. Because it is actually interesting just to go through all the terms. Yeah, so let me just go through that really quickly. Just to give you a sense of what are the terms entering the CMP anisotropies. So the final expression you get in the end, you're doing the integral, is the following. So you get that the photon perturbation evaluated at position x, okay, is a function of the photon momentum p. Okay, so it works out to minus psi of x. Okay, and then plus a bunch of terms that I'll explain in a moment. So first there's the monopole evaluated at some other location x, psi of x. And plus an integral from the Big Bang until today the time derivative of the potential time derivative of the other potential. All of it's integrated. Okay, so first let me explain what these terms mean. Okay, so first of all, this is, so this integral is not over conformal time. Okay. Right, so this theta 0 is today, the data equals 0 is the Big Bang. Right. So we're evaluating this, again, at location x as a function of the photon momentum p hat. Okay. This xl in the integral, is defined the following way. Xl is defined as x plus eta minus eta naught times p hat. Okay? So what is so what is this xl? So this is the location that at time eta emits a photon moving in direction p hat that reaches location x at time today, eta 0. Okay? So what matters is this integral of the potential along the light cone. Of the photons being emitted from these locations. Okay, right. Similarly, this xs is the same thing. It was evaluated not on the light cone, but instead on the surface of that scattering. Okay, so it's the same thing. So it's this x plus eta at recombination minus eta today. So these things are all evaluated on the surface of that scattering. Okay. At the point which, at the location xs, which then emits a photon coming towards us with this momentum p hat reaching us today at location x. Okay, good. So then let's just quickly go through each of the terms. Okay, this is the anisotropy seen at location x as a function of p hat. On the right hand side, the first term we have is the potential at our location x. Okay, so this is just the gravitational redshift. Okay, so for a photon falling into our potential well, it'll get a little bit hotter. Okay, this term is the same for all photons, right? Since all photons are falling into our potential well, so therefore this term is not observable, right? This term is therefore exactly degenerate, just with changing the overall CMU temperature.
Isn't it related to how the structures are like?
It is.
It
depends on our local, the local value of our gravitational potential. What I'm saying is that this sort of gravitational redshift cannot be distinguished from a change in the overall CMU temperature. Right? Okay, next term we have is the photon temperature perturbation at each point on the surface of that scattering. Okay? So in direction p hat, what matters is the temperature, in that direction on the surface of that scattering. Okay, makes sense? This is the gravitational potential at that same point. Okay? So again, that's just the gravitational redshift. Okay? So photons have to climb out of whatever potential wells that they're emitted from, okay? Therefore changing the temperature that we see today. Okay, the next term is called the Doppler term. This is the part of the dipole at that location dotted into the direction coming to us. Okay. It's called Doppler term because the photon dipole at that location comes from the motion of electrons at that location. They dotted into our direction. Okay. And then finally we have this integral over our past light cone, the time derivatives of these potentials. The one key thing to note here is that, as we worked out before, these potentials are mostly constant as a function of time, right? So during matter domination, these vanish, for example, right? Okay, so the only times when these don't vanish are when the potentials are changing. And when is that? Okay, that's only when the equation of state is changing. Okay, so therefore, there are two contributions to this. Okay, right. So this term is called the integrated Sachs-Wolff term, or the ISW term. And there's two contributions to this. Okay, so one from the time of recombination. Okay, that's just because the recombination happens near the time of that radiation equality when W is changing. And the second term happens today when dark energy is dominating. Okay, right. The first one's called the early ISW, the second one's called the late ISW. As you will see these things in the literature. So let me just quickly then just show you what you get, okay, from this. Okay. So let me show you how this looks. So if you work this out and then Fourier transform, to get the power spectrum, instead you work in, on the spherical harmonics, you get the angular power spectrum as opposed to the plane waves basis to get the 3D power spectrum. Okay, what you get is the following. Right, so there is these bumps and wiggles. That's just the PAO oscillation that you saw before. So again, this is not the exact answer because I made like a bunch of approximations here. Right, so here we have neglected neutrinos and so on. Okay, but you can see that qualitatively, this gets pretty close to the full answer. Okay. And so if you guys are curious, I can explain more how to do this spherical harmonic transform to go from here to this power spectrum. So the point of all this, though, for you guys just was to give you a sense for what goes into these calculations, that you guys will then use later on if you work on these with your technology.
Classic question. Why those wiggles, one of them, like the middle one, is like lower than the other one? We expect them to decay all of them together.
So past here, if you extend past here, the wiggles do decay.
But why those two, like the other one is bigger than this one?
Oh, why is number 3 bigger than number 2? The reason why the second one is like a little bit smaller than the third one is called baryon drag. The oscillations, the acoustic oscillations that we plotted before as a function of time, their period doesn't remain exactly constant as a function of time because the inertia, the rest mass of the baryons becomes important towards the time of equality, right? And also later. That affects winds up, driving down the amplitude of the even peaks compared to the odd peaks.
Oh, it's not all even.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Right. So, in the absence of that diffusion, this baryon drag, the even odd asymmetry would sort of dominate the shape. Okay. However, though, on the kinetic mixture, L is a little bit past what was plotted. The diffusion effect damps the amplitude of the oscillations. We're way past time. Sorry about that. So I'll stop here. So hopefully these calculations you did will be useful for you guys in the future. So thanks, we'll stop.